This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. 15 years ago, Alan Gurganus gifted NPR listeners with a 22-minute holiday tale. A Fool for Christmas is a modern fable from the perspective of a mall pet shop manager. The beloved North Carolina writer's twinkle-eyed reading on All Things Considered evolved into a yearly ceremony at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham. And this year, the oral tradition makes it to print. It's all thanks to a collaboration between Alan Gurganus himself, David Wofford of Horse and Buggy Press, Duke Press, and Duke Special Collections that houses Alan Gurganus' papers. So Dave Wofford joins us now. He's a Durham-based gallery curator and book designer for A Fool for Christmas. Dave, welcome to The State of Things.
Good day. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Alan, welcome back. The author of The Oldest Living Confederate Widow Tells All, White People, many other books. He's won a Guggenheim Fellowship in Mucha Mucha Mas. Welcome back.
It's great to be here. Always a pleasure.
Tell us about this, about the inspiration for this story.
I got a phone call in 2004 saying, we want you to be on All Things Considered on Christmas Eve. And I said, next year? And they said, no, 2 weeks from now. So I went into mad overdrive. I'd always wanted to write a nativity story. That's the best part of the holiday for me is Joseph and Mary and the animals and the manger and all that stuff. And I'd just been to a mall, and I was walking around the mall thinking, if I was locked into this mall, what store would I like to sleep in if I had to spend the night? And the answer was the pet shop. So all these forces came together, and I imagined Vernon Ricketts, the manager of the pet shop, very proud, very sentimental, maybe weighed about 300 pounds. And his whole life was devoted to the animals and selling the kittens and dogs. And Christmas arrived, and he finds a runaway girl in the mall who's lonely and in trouble and takes her in. So I had all the ingredients, and it was just a matter of writing as fast as I possibly could and reading it on the air. And I recorded it here in this studio. So it's a home product, and it's really been so much fun to see its evolution over the years. The Regulator invited me to read it year after year, and I revised it, but never really published it because it was a holiday story. It's awkward to get it into the magazine in time, and I was always thinking it could be just a little better. So finally, it all came together, and it's in print at last. And I did drawings for the book, and it was so much fun to try to draw as the pet store owner would see his own animals, so they're kind of sentimentalized. And
yeah, Alan improved. Created 11 drawings for the story, and I think he whipped them out in a 4-day time period.
Wow.
That's
you
right.
You were inspired. Because how long did it take you to write A Confederate Widow? That was
7 years.
Okay, I'm just for perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I want to get a sample of this, too, this product that created right here, locally made, a locally made product heard by all Things Considered listeners 15 years ago on ATC. And again, the pet store owner, we should probably set this up because he's about to liberate the animals, right? So, well, why don't we listen to this and we can come back. Here's Alan on All Things Considered.
Oh, he was a pretty little thing. Black hair spread out like damp feathers, but of course, I would call him pretty. I would, as the whatever, as her substitute, the pet store manager. Then I did something foolish but was great. I let out all the puppies and kittens, the ones that had not been sold, and it did not take them long to drift back here to find where all this new mewing was coming from. It was Christmas Eve, lit by saltwater tanks, behind the staff lounge of my dark beloved pet store, in a mall locked up tight from the outside in.
Alan Gurganus on All Things Considered in 2004, reading A Fool for Christmas. That story is now finally made it into a book. Alan is here with Dave Wofford, the book designer. So talk about how the book came together, Dave.
Well, I've been to several of the readings and always enjoyed the readings at the Regulator. Alan and I are both friends with Sarah Berghausen, who's a Duke Libraries as the curator, and took in Alan's papers, and I'd been bugging her for years to take something that was unpublished out of the library and make a make a special book edition of it. And so this was the opportunity to do that. And not only did Sarah find some money within the library to help make this possible, but then she was able to get Duke Press on board, because neither Horse and Buggy Press, as a one-person design and book publishing studio, which I run, or Duke Libraries, really has the marketing and distribution prowess that you know, a book like this deserves. So it's great to have that trio, that triumvirate partnership. And the whole book came together super fast. I think it was early October, late September, when Alan, me, Dean Smith from Duke Press, Michael McCullough from Duke Press, and the Duke Libraries, Sarah and Deborah, gathered, and we had one meeting, and then we were off and running. So that was early October, and like I said, Alan did drawings. Alan wrote an illuminating afterword called Tale of Behind the Tale, which really gives a lot of context to the genesis and evolution of the story. And then Alan and I had meetings at his house on the phone and at my studio as we sort of art directed and went back and forth amidst all of Alan's last-minute edits and trying to turn the book into a interesting visual artifact that hopefully gives voice to what is usually an oral story.
Well, how did you do that, Alan? Because you said initially you always thought it could be better, so obviously you had edits in mind, and then the idea that, that print is not the same as oral. What kind of changes did you make?
I found myself simplifying it. I tried to make the voice purer and plainer and more emotional. It's, you know, there are people who write about bad people getting into trouble for doing bad things. I try to write stories about good people getting into trouble for being good. I think that's the fate that we're all facing these days. We see so much badness in the world, and we wonder how our friends, as good as they are, can live in a world that's this corrupt and troubled. And there's a kind of heroism in Vernon Ricketts delivering a baby in the back of his pet store to save the life of the child and the mother. And I tried to let that shine through in the drawings and in and the revision of the story. So it's really been fun.
Yeah, his unwavering optimism and earnestness, too.
Absolutely. He's a total believer. And I think we need to go to school to belief. You know, the word belief is based on the German word for beloved. So what we believe is what we love, and what we love is what we believe. And there's too little of both those categories in the world right now. So it's a very old-fashioned kind of story. It's very much a holiday story and an inspirational story, I think, for a lot of people. So it's cheered me up to reread it.
I'm always impressed when really gifted writers like yourself will let themselves go into that. You use the word sentimental, right? And you're talking about all these virtues that I would think that often writers are worried about, right? If you're a professional writer, you're in the business, you know, you go to all the parties. And here you are with permission to let loose, and it always comes out so beautiful. It's not sentimental crap. Claptrap, although crap would, you know, I've read some of that too. This is not. Do you have to give yourself permission to go there? Because it comes out beautifully because you're a good writer, you know, it's not going to fail. But I wonder if you have to give yourself permission to go to a place that you wouldn't otherwise.
Well, yes, you're afraid that you're going to lapse into Valentine sentimentality that's just bogus and soft and spongy. But there's a delicate balance between true feeling and sentiment. Sentiment is usually defined as pre-processed feeling that, you know, the acknowledgement has already been made. We know how we feel about mothers and Valentines and all that stuff. But to find that delicate balance that sees very specific causes for rejoicing and moves towards something that's powerful and beyond our control is a great challenge and a great thrill when it works.
Of course, these ideas are tied up in all kinds of great human virtues and great human ideas, but this particular, when we're talking about Christmas, is very closely associated with this. This is a religious holiday, and I wonder about your relationship with religion and how you how those feelings have evolved and how those enter into this book.
part of the joy for me of reading this piece 14 times in a row at the Regulator is that I feel I've created a little liturgy of my own. I mean, there's something sacred about the concept of liturgy, of a passage that is meaningful enough so that people want to hear it again and again. And I know that when I read this, I'll see faces that I've seen all those years. There's something magical about that. And though I'm not a conventional believer, to have created something that lasts and pertains and makes people get their handkerchiefs out and laugh at the same time is a great challenge and a great joy for me. So I'm going to my own little home-built church here, and to have it in a little missal, a little prayer book sized 6-inch by 8.5-inch volume, it gives me a special pleasure.
Talk about the book, Dave, because this is obviously, we talk about holidays with a long tradition and, you know, a long legacy. Books have a long legacy, and we're worried about them. We're worried about their future. This is now an artifact. It's a book. Talk about the importance of this thing, this now being in print.
Right. Tangible. So it's a tangible, physical artifact and one that people will take care of and hopefully end up being passed down from generation to generation because the story is that good. It's only a 32-page book, but there are many, many scenes in it that are vivid and detailed. And like Alan said, you know, bring up a mix of emotions from laughing at one moment to crying at the next. And as book designer, there were two challenges for me is that, you know, I basically designed the book in a week, which is much, much quicker than I normally do because we wanted to get it out and about for this year's holiday, Christmas season. And then also knowing that this was very much not something that was written initially to be a book, but was more of a play or audio, oral recanting, I tried to do things within the design of the book that would enhance or allude to the oral nature of reading the story.
Well, like what?
Well, so instead of conventional typography and just letting the narrative unfold, there are indentations, bolds, kind of subtle typographic things, but things that are not normally done in the layout of a book that I hope help people hear Alan's voice if they have been to the reading. And if they have not been to a reading, that it helps bring the voice of Vernon Ricketts, the narrator of the story, into their head and be a more dramatic way to read the book to oneself.
You said you've been to a number of readings at the Regulator over these past years. Had you visualized the book before this?
I had not. So when Alan's papers were archived by the Duke Special Collections Library, my first idea that I approached Sarah with was, hey, I know Alan's written a bunch of op-eds for New York Times over the years. How about if we collect those and put them in a book? And Sarah was immediately, well, that's a good idea, but no. We're taking that a fool for Christmas story. We're going to make a book. Wow. And that was, I think that was either the day after or the week after the reading that Alan gave celebrating the acquisition into the archives. Mm. And then I got a celebratory phone call from Sarah, I guess a little more than a year later, saying, Dave, I found some funding and we're going to make a book.
Alan, what about the watercolors? They came quickly when they were asked for. Had you visualized those before? Had you seen them before?
I tried to imagine what a pet store owner would paint if he chose his favorite African parrot and his favorite kitten of the year and so forth and so on, and just let it roll. I started out as a painter, so I still have some vestigial skill left when I'm pressed against a wall and a deadline. And it was really, really fun because I had permission to be as pure and simple as Vernon Ricketts was. So it came very easily. And
yeah, the drawings are very splashy.
Yeah, they're fun. And Dave is so much fun to work with. I mean, I had one concept of having all the drawings as end papers, and Dave convinced me to spread the drawings through the book itself, and he was so right. I mean, you think you know best until you're bettered. And so it was a real collaboration. It was really fun.
And this was fun for me as well, because 22 years ago, Alan and I collaborated on an illustrated edition of It Had Wings, which was the brainchild of Frank Parker, who used to run the Readery Bookshop here in Durham next to where Whole Foods is now. So that, again, was a fun collaboration where he and I went back and forth, and to get to revisit that type of collaboration 22 years later is a special treat. That particular book was entirely hand-printed on the letterpress at my studio in Raleigh at the time and hand-bound, and it was very much a sort of high-end fine press book. And this book is a little bit different in that it is just, it was digitally printed at Laser Image, which is a printing and marketing company down on Miami Boulevard. So it was printed locally on a high-end Indigo digital press. And the first printing, which quickly sold out before the book even hit the stands, I think, had letterpress printing that I on the cover and back cover. So right now we're on our second printing. The second printing does not have the letterpress touches, but it's just digitally printed at Laser Image again.
All right, Alan, you're going to do this again now that you've got this one under your belt?
Hell no. Yeah. I like it. I like having my big books and my little books.
You could do some original. Are you thinking about coming up with ideas, original ideas that aren't in the archive?
It would be fun to... All right. To start a book by doing the drawings first and then writing the story to support the drawings. That's my next ambition.
All right. Well, I'm going to claim that the idea was spawned here, whatever the truth of that is, and then you'll come back and talk about it.
I will.
All right,
count
great.
Me in.
And I hope you'll be with them, Dave. Dave Wofford is a Durham-based gallery curator and book designer for A Fool for Christmas. Thank you very much for being with us, Dave.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Frank.
Alan Gurganis is the author of A Fool for Christmas. Alan, always good to see you.
It's always a pleasure for me, Frank. Thank you.
Happy holidays to you both. And you can find, by the way, links to all of this at our website, stateofthings.org, a program that is produced by Anita Rao, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Holub-Moorman. Robin Copley is our technical director. Josie Taras is our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.